Greetings and salutations, everyone. I hope I'm not having too much noise. So let me just ask the audience out there, can you give me a signal check? Am I full quieting? Am I noisy? What am I doing?
Very good. Almost DFQ. Back to normal, right? WS to it.
Okay, I thought it was going to be like that because I think it was about 8-9 months ago. Andy did a talk on why circles are 360 degrees, and for whatever reason, the repeater just didn't want to reach this area in Brooklyn. And then by the end of that TechNet, it came back. So I thought it would come back again. Okay, well, once again, welcome to everyone. This is AC2GS. I am the net control operator for the Limark Technical Net. It's been going strong for 43 years now. Every Sunday night at 8 o'clock or around, we come together, we sit down, and we chat about technology. We chat about amateur radio technology, hopefully. We talk about science and general technology. Hopefully we learn something. Hopefully we teach something. Hopefully we entertain everyone. I hope that everyone set their clock correctly. This is our first Eastern Daylight Savings Time episode of the TechNet for 2023. So I hope everyone's clock is reading the same time and everyone has made a little time for the TechNet tonight. Let me drop and I will offer you up the usual links. Okay, if you want to get in touch with me, and you can't do it on the radio, email is as good as any. That would be either for what we used to call mailbag questions. Those would be questions you would ask on the technical net. But if you don't have access to a radio and you can't get into the repeater, it's Sunday at 8 o'clock, and you either want to listen to the audio stream or listen to an archived recording of the technical net to get your answer, then you send me email, and if it's something that I think people will be interested in, we discuss it, and you retrieve the information later on. Also, if you have any topics for discussion, occasionally something comes up in the news that people know a great deal about and want to share their expertise. So they contact me and they ask, can they do a short presentation on a subject? And usually I'm fine with that. Or if you want to be part of a discussion where you don't know a lot, but you know some and you'd like to share and maybe receive, or if you know nothing about the subject, but you have an interest and you'd like to hear other people discuss it. So that's an option. Also, if you have a puzzle to share with me, we're always looking for technical puzzles to kind of stimulate neurons and discuss interesting concepts of science and technology. So if you have something preferably that's not answerable by a simple Google search, please email it to me, and if I can use it, I'll try to use it. Also, if you have a space or NASA-related subject, some news or YouTube you saw and you would like Paul to comment, you can either contact him directly. He has an email address at spacenetreport@gmail.com, but you can send it to me. And my email address for the purposes of this technical net is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. I have a link page of interesting articles, YouTubes, and what have you that I find throughout the week. I cut and paste them, and I collect them, and I put them on a link page, and they're available 24/7. You just type into your browser any old time, roy.ac2gs.com. That'll bring you to my link page, and you can click on any of those links and read them at your leisure. We have a chat room. Sometimes it's very busy, sometimes it's very quiet. You can get there by typing into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com. Let me drop for a sec. Okay. As I mentioned earlier, I stream the technical net on the Internet. So if you do not have a radio for whatever reason and you'd like to hear the technical net, you just type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com. And that will give you an audio stream. Now, originally, I designed it and put it up for the technical net, but there were some people who asked, could I please just keep the link up 24/7? Because in the old days, I think W2LIE.net had a stream, but the stream has broken repeatedly. The quality of the sound isn't quite that great. So I have left this link available for the rest of the week. So any old time you want to know what's happening on Glen Oaks, but you don't have a handy talkie or a radio of any kind, just type into your internet browser, technet.ac2gs.com, and you'll hear an audio stream. And as always, I like to remind people that my KC2NJI has a great archive site of these technical nets. He has audio archives going as far back as September of 2006. His site is called amateurradio.tv. He's had over 1 million visitors so far, and the number continues to grow. So avail yourself of his archive site. There is the recorded wisdom of many brilliant amateur radio operators who have either moved away from the area or become silent keys over the years. So there's a lot of wisdom there. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what's planned for tonight. Okay. We'll be open for questions, as per usual. I would prefer the first few questions to be amateur radio related, since this is a amateur radio technical net. But as the night progresses, if you're interested in discussing other science, technology, even medicine, as always, we do not treat or diagnose over the radio. But if you want to discuss things, I'll try my best. Other people with other expertise will add in to that mix. At 10:15, hopefully, or around that, Paul, WS2N, will come on with the SpaceNet report until about 11 o'clock, and I'll return to wish everyone well and tie a bow on it and call it a night. So that's what I got planned for tonight. If the lords of propagation and electronics are kind to us, and nothing goes wacky. Also, let me drop for a second, and I just want to tell you a little story. Okay. Some people like when I mention 10 meters. Some people think I'm trying to sell 10 meters to other people. I'm not. I'm just sharing my experiences. As many of you listening already know, I very often run, as net control operator, a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 o'clock on usually 28.380 upper sideband. Today, it was reasonably active. There wasn't that much in the way of activity, unfortunately. Europe is usually very active. I really did not hear much of Europe myself. I spoke, though, with Ken of Nebraska / South Dakota, checked in, as he almost does every single Sunday morning. Thank you to Ken. But in addition, I talked to Nebraska and Oklahoma and a whole bunch of things. And that went from 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock, and then I figured 2 hours was enough, and things were quieting down, so I shut down the net. Only to hear a gentleman come back from Namibia, of all places. Namibia is right next to South Africa. If you haven't taken a geography course lately, it's on the west coast of the lower southern portion of Africa. And the gentleman, Mike, was transmitting in Namibia, and I had a nice conversation, and a few other people on my 10-meter net did as well. So to think of it, Namibia, that was kind of the first time I think we've done the African continent on the 10-meter net. So it's one of the many reasons why I love this hobby. Anyway, I just thought I could share that with you. If you have any questions for tonight or comments or topics for discussion, preferably amateur radio first and non-amateur radio second, third, fourth, and fifth, please give me your call sign and your first name.
D2DAW, the name here is Curtis, supporting.
Thank you very much, Curtis. I appreciate your support. Anyone out there with any questions, topics for discussion, or comments for tonight, please give me your first name and your call sign. Yes, John, do you have a topic for tonight, or are you just checking in?
Yeah, I do have a topic. I'd appreciate any comments people want to allow on the value and use of network analyzers.
Okay, well, I'll put you on the top of the list, and I'll just ask one more time if anyone else wants to be on the list for tonight. I mean, you don't have to be on the list at the beginning. Obviously, we'll have a lot of free time, so you can think of a question later on. But if you have a question now, you might as well raise your hand and be written on the list.
Good evening, everyone. KAXB. I'm a newer ham, and this is first net participation. I'm working on a report right now, so no comments or topics of discussion this evening, but I'm listening in, and looking forward to the conversation.
Okay, very good. What's your first name?
Apologies. First name is Chris.
Okay, very good, Chris. And you know where to find us if you have any question down the line. So continue with your work, and I hope we're not too distracting here.
A welcome distraction.
Okay. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for any questions or topics for discussion tonight?
WS1 question.
Okay, Paul, you're on the list. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight?
I have one for you.
Very good. Glad to see you again, John. It's been a while. I saw you come by the chat room, so I knew you were around once again. Anyway, we'll go to our first person, John, NQ1U. Now, when you said a network analyzer, I assume you are alluding to a vector network analyzer. There are also scalar network analyzers out there.
Yeah, I'm aware of the differences. I just would appreciate a discussion on the general value of why one would want to use one of these. I know that they're much more valuable than just an SWR meter, but what makes one choose one or the other, and what makes one even want one?
Okay. Well, in my opinion, a SWR meter is a passive device that allows you to get an idea of how you are operating on the exact frequency that you are operating. It doesn't offer you any particular insight into the surrounding frequencies that are available to you until you land on them. So an SWR meter might provide somewhat similar information for individual frequencies, whereas a vector network analyzer is an active device that has a built-in generator that sweeps frequency ranges and can calculate impedances across a wide frequency range and give you a good indication of the present availability of resonance on an antenna. So I really, you know, if you don't have antennas, obviously you certainly don't have much of a use for a vector network analyzer unless you're doing more esoteric stuff like adjusting duplexers or working with tuned networks and such. But antennas, it can be very useful. You can run a sweep and see whether there's one resonant trough, whether there are multi-band troughs in the design of your antenna, how close are you to one-to-one, how far away are you to one-to-one, and a lot of important factors. It's not the ultimate solution to how is my antenna doing, because unfortunately there are other factors that we've discussed before. The efficiency of an antenna is very important. You might have a perfectly resonant antenna, but the efficiency of its changing your electrical current to radio waves could be less than 1% efficiency, and that would be a terrible antenna. Same with the radiation pattern. If all of your RF energy being emitted from your antenna is going straight up above you, you're not going to really be doing a good DX work, because you're not going to be skipping through the ionosphere. So takeoff angle, radiation pattern, efficiencies all factor in, but they are much more difficult to measure, and so everyone worries about what their standing wave ratio is. And the best way to gauge how your antenna would deal with that, in my opinion, is a frequency sweep with a vector network analyzer.
Okay, thanks. That's a good summary. Appreciate it. Appreciate it very much. Thank you. NQ1U.
Okay, you're welcome, John. Like I said, I'm very fascinated by antennas. Ultimately, most amateur radio operators tend to spend significantly more time about antennas than they do radios, because no one builds their own radios anymore, very few. So the difference between one ham and another is either what commercial antenna did you buy, and there's hundreds of them, or what antenna did you build, and how did you build it, and where did you put it, and how is it working, and all kinds of things. So antennas are a fascinating subject, and a VNA is the best tool to give you at least a partial idea of how it's functioning. In the old days, when vector network analyzers were first developed, they were commercial products and cost tens of thousands of dollars. And we probably have people listening tonight who are on the commercial end of radio technology who still use very expensive vector network analyzers because they need it for sundry reasons that we've discussed before and probably will again. But nowadays, inexpensive consumer versions of vector network analyzers have plummeted in price. There are rig experts if you want something medium priced and very user friendly, very durable. You could take them outside, you could knock them around, you could drop them a couple of stories and they probably would work. But for people who don't have a lot of discretionary fund, we've talked about nano VNAs, which are much smaller, a bit more fragile, a bit more erratic, in that there are numerous people, companies that are manufacturing sort of the same design. They might cut corners, and you don't know about it until it fails in the field. But nano VNA, you can get some models for under $100, which is a good price point for what they provide. Anyone else with any comments about vector network analyzers? You know, we've talked about them before, and as I said, we'll no doubt talk about them again in future technical nets.
Comment.
Sure, please comment.
At K2GJE, you can also use a VNA to sweep a balun or an unun and see if it's any good where you're using it. They have a tendency to go bad. You can also use it to sweep a low pass, a high pass filter. Those are some of the other units that you can do, over.
Yes, you're right, Ed. Although I think most hams kind of use them solely to test out their antennas and to check them over time, I've heard more than a few hams advise other people to kind of take out the VNA and sweep an antenna that they've installed, you know, in the past to just document whether they're operating along specs. One important slight difference to VNAs is there are one-port VNAs and there are two-port VNAs. Two-port VNAs usually cost a little bit more and are capable of doing more operations than a single port. Okay, I guess we've talked out the VNAs for this Sunday night. Again, I am sure, like antennas, we will be discussing them in future technical nets. That brings us to Paul, WS2N. What's your subject, question, comment for tonight, Paul?
Waiting for a tone. Now I hear the tone. Good evening, Roy and everybody on the net. Yeah, I had a question about an email from ARRL. I wonder if you read this one. It's when they awarded money to try to get people to develop what they call the Free DB project. They plan on eventually, it looks like, it's like the compressed speech down to 1,600 bits per second, and then modulate it, and then retransmit it, you know, this all for HF, which I thought was interesting, but I'm just wondering what part of the band would they put it in, the digital end, or it sounds like they would be putting it into the, where our single sideband is. You know, and if they did that, you know, like I could picture them doing this on 80 meters all over. And one of the shortest, tightest areas for bandwidth for DX on 80, you know, 80 phone anyway, is from 3.785 to 3.800. I use that. Mostly I like to be on CW, but if I'm on phone and on 80 meters, that's the DX portion of the band. And all I can picture is all this digital noise going across, you know, if this thing ever took off. So I'm just wondering if you read this and what you think about it. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about Free DV. Free DV has been around for a long, long time, and was being hailed as the common man's answer to the company that had a stranglehold on voice encoder decoders. Basically, the premise is already in action and very disappointing. D-Star, I think on my ICOM 7100, so that's 10 years ago, built D-Star into HF. So it is theoretically possible for you, and I certainly wouldn't suggest that you do it on the data spectrum, because D-Star output is, again, something like 3 kilocycles wide. So the wide bandwidth would require you to stay in the phone bands. But for many years, it's been possible to do digital in a proprietary way using D-Star. I have never heard it done. I have never read of anyone who wanted to do it or, you know, anything. So it was sort of like, if you wanted to do it, here's the radio 10 years ago. And everyone just said, eh. Free DV, the problem, one of the problems with the voice modes available, being DMR, D-Star, and Fusion, is they all depend upon a encoding-decoding phoneme chip. The problem with digitizing audio voices is that the resulting bandwidth is even too wide for AM or SSB. So in order to compress it, you need to use some kind of encoder-decoder. There is a chip, it's called an AMBI chip, The manufacturer has it tightly controlled. It costs, a fee to use the algorithms and such. And so people were looking around for a open source version, which they found in FreeDV. FreeDV was actually a doctoral thesis. A gentleman in the field developed it for the purposes of his doctoral thesis 20 years ago and just left it that way. Now, other people kind of took it up and used it to encode on the air. My Flex 6700 six or seven years ago had a plug-in for FreeDV. So FreeDV is alive and well and being hawked as a means to do digital voice communications. Unfortunately, I don't think there's much of an actual demand.
Yeah, I hope not. But anyway, they say they want to modulate it to a 1.25 kilohertz wide and 16 QPSK signal. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. As long as it doesn't take over the bands. Digital is great, but, I don't want that to be the main part of VHF bands in the future. Back.
VDH with a question.
Yes, John. Also, I want to point out that there is another digital mode voice protocol, and I always forget what it is because it's not memorable. I think it might be M14. Which uses a FreeDV as the voice encoder decoder technology. So this might have something to do with that other technology. But what do you want to say, John?
Oh, well, actually, a question and a comment. First of all, about FreeDV, actually, this is the first I've heard of that. Do you know anything about the sample rate, bits per sample, or anything like that? And the other thing is, if they do do that and go to 16 QPSK, that will cut the baud rate, which is what's going to control the bandwidth. That'll cut the baud rate down to 1/4 of regular, binary phase shift keying or something like that. So 16 QPSK will reduce the bandwidth, but. Do you know anything about the sample rate or number of bits per word or bits per sample of FreeDV?
Unfortunately, it's probably been 5 years since I looked into it because it was a big topic for discussion. I used to be a big fan of Taper, the Tucson analog packet radio club. They were the ones who designed the Apache Labs SDRs, and they still run affiliated with ARRL seminars every year that are YouTubed. And the people who wanted to really use FreeDV to bring out an open source digital voice technology were really promoting it, but it's been so long that I forgot. I'm sure you could Google it. I'm sure there's a lot of information available, both simplified and complicated, depending upon your flavor. I could understand why using, more modern modulation technologies would be able to slice the bandwidth. I don't really perceive that most amateur radio operators are that concerned about bandwidth. Except for contesting, there's usually space that I can see. And it requires a complete overhaul of their radio gear, and hams don't really like to pay a lot of money for almost the same thing. And as Paul mentioned, it kind of goes back historically to the 50s. A lot of old-time guys who were very happy with their AM radios were very annoyed with single sideband because early designs sometimes sounded harsh to them, especially if they only had a AM radio that they were receiving as single sideband signals. So it's happened before. It may happen again. But again, I tend to think they are trying to solve a problem that doesn't quite exist. which is a very common thing these days. Silicon Valley seems to do that on a daily basis.
Yeah, fine business. Okay, yeah, I'll Google it. I know Google is not my enemy, so I'll check it out. Okay, thanks, Roy.
AWS to line.
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, the group that got this money is the Amateur Radio Digital Communications, ARDC. They were awarded the money. I mean, if this is right, $420,000 grant. that's a serious grant. I guess you could start. You could Google that and see what comes up. Maybe that might help you. And it was 1600 bits per second, and then that would be, you know, modulated and eventually put back into the, you know, put into the. Into the transmitter, so you know you'd hear voice coming out. You wouldn't hear digital modes, I guess. I'm not sure how that would work. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Question.
Yes, question.
WB2CQT. I've been listening, and I just don't know the answer to this. Is it permissible to operate free DV now?
Yes, it is. And matter of fact, before Flex decided that the plugins weren't really worth their trouble, I could have done it 5 years ago if I was so inclined, which I think no one else was either, which is why Flex discontinued the somewhat esoteric plugin. But legitimately, you can do that. You can take my 7100, my ICOM 7100 I'm using right now, turn it to 40 meters, the phone band, set it for DSTAR instead of single sideband, and transmit away. I don't think there's anything inherently illegal in that action, especially because ICOM promoted that aspect of the radio almost 10 years ago.
Okay, thank you on that. My radio has it inside there someplace, but I've never played around with it. I don't know where to look for people that might be using it, what frequencies might be common, so I just have ignored it at this point.
Kitty2OGB, I've heard that some people actually take common mobile radios that have, like, more than just 2 meter 440, like 6 and 10 meters, and they turn it into 11 meters. What do you think of that, Roy?
Well, yeah, I don't think that's terribly uncommon. Because of the nature of 10 meters and 11 meters, they're so close together that just by fixing some of the filter circuits, you can turn a CB radio into a 10-meter radio and a 10-meter radio into a CB radio if you're so inclined. So I think they've been kind of doing that for many, 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 many years. To this day, when I'm on 10 meters, there's a charming gentleman I've mentioned before that I call the Whistler. He never IDs himself. He just kind of whistles into the frequency. And my assumption, because he came by when we were having CB problems, is that he's probably a guy who comes from CB who has a radio that can also work 10 meters. So, yeah, I've heard about that. It's an almost trivial, from my understanding, modification because of 11 meters and 10 meters being so close together.
Well, the reason is because both can actually be operated on AM, and CB is, most of it is AM, so technically, yes, you can convert 6 meters or 10 into 11. It's entirely possible. I mean, I wouldn't recommend using the radio then with 11 because it's going to transmit way higher than what it's supposed to be, because then it's not really a CB radio. It's an amateur radio, but now with CB capabilities.
Well, unfortunately, CB has a history of kind of bending all kinds of rules. The FCC has tried to put all kinds of limitations of linear amplifiers when they are designed to operate on 10 meters because the tendency is for some citizens band users to take 10-meter linear amplifiers, which are legal for 1.5 kilowatts, and adjust the filters down to 11 meters and operate significantly over the maximum legal power.
Well, I don't think this really would be true, but one person claimed that they were able to operate their CB and was able to pick up somebody like from Australia, which is like over 6,000 miles away. I highly doubt that that is true. There is no way you'd be able to cheat with something like that. There's just no way.
Well, I would beg to differ. As I mentioned, just this morning on 10 meters, which is not that far from 11 meters, I happen to be using 500 watts peak, but there were other people using significantly less power. And we were talking to Namibia, Africa.
So I guess you can talk way farther than what you really should be able to do with citizen band. That's just out the window. Come to think of 10 meters, I was actually on it today. I was mainly using upper sideband, but I think you can use any mode with 10 meters if you're an extra. You can use any mode with anything if you're an extra.
Okay, but there are agreed upon protocols. It would not be sporting to use lower sideband on 10 meters. Just by mutual agreement, upper sideband is used for the upper HF bands, and lower sideband is used for the lower HF bands. And the reason goes back historically to the design of the earlier single sideband modulators and such. So although theoretically, yeah, you could use any, there's a lot of gentlemen's agreements that people rely upon. There are areas where it's frowned upon to use single sideband. It's set aside for amplitude modulation. There are frequency ranges where I think some extended single sideband users like to hang out. So you have to keep in mind all those gentlemen agreements. It's not just the FCC.
You can use AM on 10, correct?
Yes, and matter of fact, I think there's a repeater on 10 meters that's AM.
Yeah, I'm on the upper side on 10 and 20 and lower on 40. Means I didn't really bother using 40 today, even though I brought it with me. I am also interested in a question, which you'd be willing to toss me in the log, and will get to me when I get to the top. So that's all I've got for now. But yeah, I'd like to try other stuff besides upper and lower side with 10.
Getting
to OGB, back to net control.
Okay, very good, Craig. I put you down on the list. We're getting back to Paul. You know, people already have those complaints about the hash noise. If you don't have a receiver that properly handles digital transmissions, it can be incredibly annoying. People experience that, unfortunately, even with VHF, UHF. There are repeaters in the area. Limark has one, Kings County has one, that use Yaesu's fusion technology, which is a mix of both analog FM and a variation on digital voice. If you don't have a radio that can kind of sense either one and switch accordingly, if you just have an FM radio, and you're tuned to one of those repeaters and a digital signal comes through, it can produce a lot of noise. And I've talked to more than a few people that have taken repeaters that utilize fusion off of their scanning list because they've grown tired of the problems. If you have a radio that is capable of having a receive squelch, it's a little bit easier. You can set that the squelch will open up only if it hears a PL tone from the transmitter while it's in analog. When it's in digital, it won't produce that tone, so it won't open the squelch, and you'll just hear silence. But not all radios have a tone squelch that works for receive as well as transmit. But, you know, it's been a problem in UHF-VHF. It might become a problem in HF. Again, my gut feeling is it's one of those noble efforts that probably are unwarranted and not terribly looked forward to. I haven't really heard anyone say that what we need is more bandwidth, which is probably the major benefit that this newer technology, you know, you'd be able to cram more people doing contests maybe on the band, but you know, as far as RagChews and such, they're very few and they're far between, unfortunately, these days. So I perceive it at this point, at least, of a solution in search of a problem. But, you know, I'm sure other people have other attitudes.
Okay. Thanks for all the info and comments. Very interesting. And, you know, I'll follow it along. These are these ARRL emails that you get now. So what the heck is this? Now I know. And by the way, was it Craig, one of these tried FM on 10 meters. I used to do that years ago. And they had FM repeaters. Accurate.
Yeah, and there are radios that are designed to operate on 10 meters, unfortunately, that only operate using FM mode. Sam, KD2... NXJ, I think it was, unfortunately, who became a silent key. He had a radio that was capable of 10 meters, but it was only capable of FM mode on 10 meters. So he wanted very much to participate in our 10-meter net, and I wish he had an opportunity to do so before he passed away. But his radio was only for FM. So, yeah, there are repeaters, I think FM repeaters on 10 meters as well. They're few and far between, but they do exist. Thank you very much, Paul. Anyone else with any comment before we move on to the next person?
Yeah, WB2BXL.
Yes, Frank.
Yeah, I just tuned in. And I think you were talking a little bit about the proposed or the digital voice that's in development for HF. Am I right?
Yes, that's what we were talking about. Paul brought up the subject of FreeDV, which is a voice encoder decoder protocol that's been around for a while. That's been given to the open source community.
Yeah, I was wondering about maybe you covered it already, but what I was wondering about is, what is it going to be considered? Is it going to be considered a digital mode? Is it going to be considered a voice mode for purposes of awards and contests, et cetera? And what part of the band will be put in? The digital band or the voice band? Go ahead.
Well, presently, the modern technologies, I mentioned earlier, the ICOM IC7100, which I'm using right now, was designed to use D-Star digital mode on HF bands. Its bandwidth was too wide to be appropriate, I think, for the data area, so it would have to stay in the voice area. This new technology is going to use much more efficient modulation schemes. It'll narrow the bandwidth, but still at 1.5 kilohertz, it's still going to be too wide, in my humble opinion, to behave nicely in the data region. And probably there will be some new gentleman agreements of band plans of where people will be allowed to use their digital mode. In the same way that there are areas of mutual agreement that allow for amplitude modulation only to be used on parts of the voice band spectrum.
Yeah, well, amplitude modulation is a lot wider than is 3 or 5 kHz. I should know this. I forget. Single sideband, I think you normally run a 2.4 kilohertz filter for. I think you can narrow it to 2.2 and it'd still be intelligible. I know, of course, on the flex radios, you can narrow your filter as much as you want. But that's anyway. They're also claiming, apparently, that it's going to be more efficient than single sideband, which, of course, you have more energy concentrated than on sideband if you can run it at 1.6, 1.5 kilohertz instead of 2.4. So it'll be more efficient in that sense. But it sounds to me like it's a full-duty cycle mode, QPSK, I think. So if it's full-duty cycle, you're going to lose some of that efficiency by having to run lower power on most of the modern radios. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. I think, earlier that when I was talking today on single sideband, although I was peaking at about 700 watts, my average output was below 100 watts. You're going to have... It's going to be 100%. It's somewhat like using FM modulation. So it might be more efficient, but it abuses your equipment much more. So in order to improve the life expectancy, or you either have to limit the transmissions power, or you have to beef up the output circuits, because they're mostly kind of spec'd for single sideband. They're not really spec'd for things that are full-duty cycle. So, you know, on the paper, I guess so, but does it really impact? Is the power efficiency going to improve significantly enough that you're basically going to have to either – you're not going to retrofit these things. Most likely, they're just going to use it as an excuse to sell new radios and such, but it'll be curious to see what happens. Again, I don't really see that much of a demand for what you can get out of this, but, you know, I'm not a marketer.
Oh, yeah, but especially like in your case, you software upgrade to your Flex radio to run it on... I won't call it FreeBase, FreeDV, because it's defined by software. So you're not going to have to get a new radio to get it. And those who don't have the newer software radios are going to be able to do it with a modem, I would think, just like for the other digital modes. Yeah, and FM is like doubly cursed, because first of all, you have to reduce your power because it's a full-duty cycle mode compared to sideband. And second of all, it's wired. So your power is spread across more of a spectrum, because it's between, depending on your form of FM, it's between 5 and 15 kilohertz is wide. So the wider the bandwidth, the more your power is spread out. Go ahead.
DDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
Well, if they go 16 PSK, that's going to, and at 1600 bits per second, theoretically, that would cut the baud rate down to 400 boards, 1600 divided by log base 2 of 16. So theoretically, they should be able to squeeze that into a 1.8 kilohertz, maybe 1.6 kilohertz channel. Go ahead.
Okay, I guess it's really up to the powers that be how they're going to split this here. If it's at all popular, I think it's going to crowd out the poor guys doing RITI and PSK and FD8 and CW. So I would still kind of tend to think that it will end up on the voice portion of the band. The FCC can rule any which way that they want to. Just to kind of get back quickly to Frank's comment, not only are you going to have to do the voice encoding decoding, you're going to have to do the modulation. Now, true, software-defined radios are much more flexible. And as I mentioned before, my Flex 67 has already been able to do free DV. It was also able to do D-Star before... the company kind of gave up on the effort because the software cost more than the demand, which was non-existent, warranted. So that's possible. And also, different modulation schemes are not that difficult when you have a software-defined radio that's doing all of this in software rather than hardware. But you still have a large number of guys with old analog-based radios that are going to find it significantly difficult to make that technological jump. My guess would be most of those guys wouldn't be interested in making that technological jump. But, it's interesting to see what they're going to come up with.
Yeah, a friend of mine on the West Coast has, I think, one of the entry-level radios, and he says he just found it more difficult than it's worth to get it to work on digital mode. So apparently on some of the lower end radios, it's even with the right modems and stuff, it's fairly difficult. But it is interesting. It will be interesting to see where this winds up. And of course we have the other problem, the FCC, though. Of course they have a technical staff. Nobody on the commission itself is an engineer anymore. They're all communications lawyers whose only interest is, apparently, is how they can make money when they, in the industry after they leave the commission. So it becomes even more of a challenge to get them to determine where the best place to put all these new modes are, regulatory-wise, Gareth.
Yeah, unfortunately, the business of the FCC is just to mine commercial interest in higher frequencies. Thankfully, most commercial businesses are interested in the gigahertz frequencies, not the HF ones, so we're kind of safe at this point. But, yeah, there's no one thinking technically there. They're thinking money and such. Like I said, there's already a slew of other types of digital data formats. I've mentioned in the past that you can open some of the software and see a laundry list of modes that make you cross-eyed, and there's no way, unfortunately, to tell which is why some people put up websites with small audio snippets, so if you got a good ear and you listen to the tribble of a signal, you could maybe guess if it's a PSK 16 or 32 or 128 or 14 or 12, 112 different other digital modes that some guy thought was really neat, but no one really felt was necessary. And so they just collect on software to decode them. And occasionally, one guy and his friend send signals back and forth. For a while, I got interested in slow scan TV, which is basically the practice of a couple of guys, mostly in the Midwest, sending 1950s, Korean War age postcards back and forth to each other, which is a fascinating sociological experience. but little other than that.
Yeah, I mean, you got a whole zoo of digital modes now. Slow scan, of course, it's been around since, like the 1960s. When I was a kid, in the early 70s, I remember hearing the slow scan wobbling on 14230. That somehow wound up in the voice band. And one of the local guys, he and his father got, the robot slow scan stuff. That's what the company was called, Robot. I actually got to see him operating this thing on HF. But anyway, so some of those modes have actually been around for a long time. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mentioned radio teletype. That's almost ancient. There's a lot of, everyone kind of says the first truly digital transmission mode was CW. And then others have developed since then over the 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. There's always some guy out there who thinks he's reinvented the wheel, except this time it's a lot better than the previous 5 billion designs for a wheel. And, occasionally they're correct. Joe Taylor has kind of turned everything upside down with his new algorithms that allow you to use relatively low power to reach very, very far distances, where you can actually receive signals below the noise floor because of the redundancy, because of the slow symbol rates involved, and all kinds of interesting technological tricks. But most of the digital modes are at best incremental improvements, not sufficient to warrant anyone really using them, so they just collect like detritus.
Yeah, well, FT8 was meant to be a weak signal mode apparently, but there are so many people on the FT8 channel now that it's not a weak signal mode anymore on most bands. It's still thought of as on 6 meters. Though today, most of the DX I was hearing on 6 meters this afternoon was on CW. I saw guys calling on FT8, but at least in the remote site I was using, I wasn't decoding any DX signals. I was hearing, I heard some stations on in South America on. I found that kind of interesting. I kind of expected that the 5313 would be crowded, and it wasn't. I was just picking up a couple of weak DX stations on CW. Go ahead.
Well, I find FT8 almost always kind of busy. It's a very popular mode. We've had people kind of sitting in the chat room doing FT8 while they listen to the technical net. And I knew a guy who set things on kind of autopilot, and he would just have to hit the key occasionally. I have seen some software designs where you can fully automate FT8, which at that point it kind of takes any kind of enjoyment out of it as far as I'm concerned. It limits your ability to interact with other people. It's basically a game of tag. Because of the low symbol rate, it takes a long time to say anything, and they have fixed text fields. So there's something called JS8 call, which is FT8 with more text boxes so that you can actually have a very, 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 very slow conversation using JS8 call using FT8 protocols. It was designed originally, my understanding, as a low-power mode, but hams being hams, they've cranked it up. I've talked to ARRL officials who tell me that they have used FT8 at full legal power. So if they're doing it, I'm sure there's a lot of guys who bend the rules who are doing it. So it's no longer a low power mode for many people. They just hit the accelerator and go for broke.
It's not bending anybody's rule. It's legal, and as far as I know, the awards and contest rules allow you to do it. So it's not breaking any rules. I suspect at some point they may say, and maybe it's some, I think it's some contest.